Good afternoon. Today is February 28, 2017. We will open our subcommittee on public safety and continue with our public hearing of Senate Bill 5532. We have Mr. McCormick and Deputy Director Stuckey to have some fun with PowerPoint and all right, we'll take PowerPoint. It away.
Sir, you just stole my opening line.
Co-Chair
Stark, members of the committee, I'm Dave Stuckey. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department.
Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, I'm Sean McCormick. I'm the Finance Director with the Oregon Military Department.
I can assure you of two things today. One, there's no videos, and two, there's lots of numbers. It will be our intent to try and dive into the programs a little bit. To augment what General Stencil said yesterday from a budget perspective, not intending to brief every slide or every bullet. So if you see something there that catches your attention that I didn't brief, please don't hesitate to redirect me. Our first slide, I'd like to frame this session in the context that Major General Stencil also briefed it yesterday in the mission triad in terms of the warfight, homeland, as well as the partnership.
Do we have the presentation coming up?
Actually,
there we go.
Wasn't Dave so cool the way Excellent. He glanced at the screen, saw it went there, and just kept right on
You
going.
Kind of like blinked and
that
it came on.
That was smooth. That was
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Stark, Representative Huffman. This is the mission triad that we discussed yesterday. The middle sections where we're talking about operations, emergency management, community support, and the community support both in homeland as well as partnership is really the meat of our potatoes in terms of what we do. And then the support and enhancement elements is the foundation of the Oregon National Guard and the Oregon Military Department. Our first slide, administration. Of course, this is where General Stencil and the command staff is located for the control of both the Army National Guard, the Air Guard, as well as the Emergency Management Office. We'd like to think that OMD is a unique state agency. I think everyone that comes up here probably says the same thing. Our agency is largely funded with federal dollars. On any given federal fiscal year, as General Stencil said yesterday, operationally, we're looking at about $300 million. A little over $320 million. And then this biennial budget that we're going to see later is actually for $26 million. I'd like to cover the composition on the full-time side a little bit, because a lot of what we're talking about in the program areas is about people. It is about people getting stuff done on the support side within the Oregon National Guard. And so from the full-time perspective, we have about 2,500 employees. We have 1,000 federal technicians, put those aside. We have 1,000 active duty guardsmen, both on the Army and the air side. And then we have about 475 budgeted state employees across this this agency. Most of them are budgeted with federal dollars or a little bit of other fund when it's OEM and the 911 piece. In fact, across our state agency, only 14 of them are 100% general funded. So there's a big infusion of federal dollars and then some other fund dollars that help support our agency across the enterprise. Our first triad on the fight, and this is really mutually supporting. Our bread and butter on the Army Guard side is operations and facilities. It's the base. It's our facilities totals about 3.4 million square feet across this state. We're everywhere. You saw that slide yesterday with General Stencil. You add in the Air Guard and the air bases in both Kingsley as well as Pang, Portland Air National Guard, and that's another 1.3 million. So we're a large state agency when it comes to square footage. We're about 4.7 million, second to Department of Corrections, but we're not competing with the university system. The Army's there our shoulder. It's what we lean on for both our preparedness on the response side if needed, as well as the federal and state mission for our guard forces. Our armories are typically 50-50 in funding. And so what this discussion here for the next hour or so is going to be talking about cooperative agreements on the Army Guard side. So when we're talking about federal money coming in, we're talking about cooperative agreements. A cooperative agreement is a National Guard Bureau agreement between them and the state. General Stencil is a state employee saying, you do this and I will give you this money. And so it's very specific about what they can do. One state, we're not unique. Every state has the same cooperative agreement. So the appendix that covers armories applies to all 54 states and territories that the National Guard Bureau provides funding for.
Question.
Go ahead, Brett Barker.
Oh, it's over.
Oh, me. I, sorry.
I'm trying to find this in the in our system. Where is it?
Should be it's listed under today's hearing.
February 28th.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. All right. So something is there. Okay. That's what I was wondering about. Thank you very much.
All right.
You betcha. He tries to find it.
We all set?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. And so the end state here is operations and maintenance is the shoulder for the Army Guard. Next bullet that I wanted to brief is the construction program. It's funded mainly with a mix of federal funds and then a very small amount of general funds. It helps support some very recent successful programs that we've had, both at Camp Withicum that I'll talk about later with a large Army complex, as well as Dallas and the Dalles. Slide. On the Air Guard side, we also have an operations program. The three bullets that I'd like to cover are the bottom three, starting with the CE, or the Civil Engineering Program. Identical programs, different mix of personnel and state and federal funding. But this is the piece that actually supports those the facilities and ensures that the facilities are operational. Make certain that those jets get up in the air. CE is not the glamorous piece at the two bases. At Pang, we have 20 employees, Portland Air National Guard, and then at Kingsley down in Kay Falls, we have 28, and they're facility maintenance personnel. They keep the building and the HVAC system operational, so the critical aircraft testing equipment can be maintained in the right environment, so there's no hiccups in terms of making certain that those aircraft are maintained properly. They're also the heavy equipment techs. So they're the ones that keep the ramp. This isn't glamorous, but they keep the ramp clear from debris and snow this winter, so those jets can get up at a moment's notice. So without those pieces, the two wings just simply grind to a slow halt. Now, in normal business, we need those pieces going. In Pang, It's a federal appropriation mix of 80% federal and 20% state. At Kingsley, it's 85-15. Why the difference? It's because of the mission types. Kingsley, as General Stinsel mentioned yesterday, is in Clay Falls, is trains not only the Air Guard F-15 pilot, but also the Air Force F-15 pilot. So there's a little bit higher bump up of federal assistance in Clay Falls as opposed to Portland Air National Guard base. Next bullet I'd like to cover is security. Security, obviously, jets and munitions requires just a little bit heightened demand of security and a security posture at both our bases. We have a mix of federal and state employees. This is 100% federally funded. All federal dollars through a cooperative agreement do this. We have a mix of federal and state employees. At Portland Air National Guard base, we have 12 state employees. And then at Kingsley, we have 11 state employees. I'll cover the fire department next. We have two fire departments at both bases. These are your typical fire departments, state employees. They're 24/7. In a steady state, the wing commanders are not launching jets without those fire departments operational. And the reason for it is there's a little bit unique twist. They're trained and they're maintained these skills and this expertise to perform air crew extraction, which is something you typically don't see in your normal fire department. At Portland Air National Guard base, we have 20 employees. At Kingsley, we have 30 employees. The National Guard Bureau Cooperative Agreement, back to that cooperative agreement again, in this case with the two fire departments, they almost pay 100% of those costs. And has gone on and gone off a couple of times here, actually once, this past biennium. But right now, National Guard Bureau is paying almost all of it. There's a piece that they don't pay, and that's the additional pay for certifications. And so the we can't go back and argue it. We do. They say no. And this is really the stuff that was locally bargained in our CBAs. And it's about $100,000 a biennium for each fire department that helps pay for some of those state costs. Slide. I'd like to transition here to the homeland. And the Secure the Homeland, obviously, our centerpiece is Office of Emergency Management. They have four program areas within the budget piece. First is the 911 program, and it provides the backbone for the call taking across this state. 911 services within OEM supports 43 different PSAPs, a primary service answering point, or a 911 call taking center. They're funded through the emergency communications tax. We all pay that tax. If you have a phone that reaches a 911, capable of reaching a 911 center, then you have to pay 75 cents a month for that. Biennial, that's about 80 plus million. We're estimating a little bit higher here for this next biennium. And largely most of it's passed through money. 60% of it goes to the PSAPs in a funding, in a separate formula. 35% goes into an equipment account. Up to 4% is admin support for the Office of Emergency Management. And then 1% goes to Department of Revenue for making all that work. And so in this case, we're looking at the funding streams and in comparison to what the locals provide. And out of the 43 PSAPs, the average, $80 million you would think is a lot of money and would cover that. But really, it only covers about 28% of the PSAP operations across the state. The rest is done locally, whether you're paying for it out of a bond or otherwise. A couple other things that the 911 program and Andrew Phillips and his team have done here recently is the frame relay system. We had an end-of-life analog system that reached the PSAPs, and so we had to transfer it to a digital system. We basically spent a little less than $2 million to make this digital system work. We're 39 out of 43 PSAPs right now. There's only four to go, and then the entire state will be on a digital system, and we won't have to worry about parts that you can't get in the old analog system. The other thing that OEM has done that's exciting is the text to 911. Text to 911, we're covering about eight counties right now, about almost half the state. We started in the Portland area. One of the reasons for doing that was Clark County, the state of Washington, was there, and we didn't want that relationship that exists since the demographics separated. So we started in Clark County. Actually, Andrew Phelps did move to the coast and is moving down to the valley. So he expects this test case to be complete here within the next biennium. The next program area I'd like to cover is...
Hold on just a moment, sir. Rep. Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, before I want to flip back to the 75-cent service fee, do you hear from the PSAP partners? We had testimony in one of the roadshow hearings. I think it might have been Madras, but it was one of the roadshow hearings this past couple of weeks. Somebody encouraging us to look at that and maybe increase the fee to a buck or a buck and a quarter. Are you hearing from PSAP partners that the 75 cents isn't adequate anymore? They're having to rely more and more on local funding, or what do you hear?
In the past, Co-Chair Stark, Co-Chair Winters, Representative Huffman, we have just recently seen an uptick where that $80 million is actually paying for 28% of a PSAP operation as opposed to 24, but it's roughly the same. It's holding steady. Yes, the answer is the PSAP community is looking for additional revenue, and they're struggling to continually to maintain that across the state. This tax sunsets in 2022. We would expect that we will ask the governor's office if we could submit for a legislative concept to continue it. Whether it's increased or not is another question. But we absolutely must have it. What that final number is going to be debatable. One of the offsets here, recent past, it was the 15th session. We had the prepaid initiative,
right.
which was extremely challenging.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, but we figured it out.
And that actually increased. That actually had an uptick. We're looking at an increase of about.
Co-Chair Starks, members of the committee, we're seeing about a $4 million per calendar year increase right now based on the prepaid tax being applied to prepaid devices.
Which is a little bit higher than what the estimates were at the time of this legislation in 2015. Sir?
Follow up on that.
Go ahead.
And the collection of that prepaid, you know, that was the controversy that made it go on for multiple biennia before we could come to an agreement. Is the collection on that been fairly smooth as far as you know?
Fairly smooth from our standpoint, co-chairs and Representative Huffman. Department of Revenue is doing a great job in making certain that gets collected. We don't know of any issues.
I hadn't heard of any either.
No, sir.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay.
Sir, moving on. Operations and preparedness program, the heart of OEM as it applies to what we typically hear in terms of response, training, exercises, plans, cascaded response exercise in June. This is all the heart is a mix of federal funding that Andrew Phelps has with that program area. Some of it is his Homeland Security grant. A little bit of it is a different grant that we'll get into. The last two program areas, kind of just roll them up together. This is kind of a disasters RS, grants RS type of arena, particularly with OEM. If you roll up all those grants and grants, disaster grants don't end in the biennium. They're not clean that way. Several of them have been open for several years. But that really adds up to about $247 million. And a lot of what Director Phelps does is just kind of pass that on through. I think right now our open grants are five different pre-disaster mitigation grants, six post-disaster fire grants, eight public assistant disaster, which is the presidential decks, and then eight post-disaster mitigation grants. So there's a lot of different grant mechanisms that he's passing with his staff and the strings that are associated to it out to the locals to ensure that they get what they need accomplished. Next slide. Cover emergency operations. This is titled emergency, but this is a National Guard centric. From the standpoint that since 2001, we've had about 5,300 soldiers and airmen from the National Guard placed on state active duty, and this is the bucket that we put that in. A National Guardsman, there's basically three statuses they could go in, and sometimes it gets a little complicated, but in general we got Title 10 status, which is the presidential go off, fight wars, come back hopefully safe and sound. Title 32 is your typical guard status, and that's the one where you see them going to drill weekend, where they're going to annual training, and then you have state active duty. The rules, the federal rules are very, very tight. When we call on the National Guard and the governor calls on the National Guard, typically it is going to be in a state active duty status, which means we make them state employees, state general fund. We front load it. In some cases, we're asking for limitation because if it's fire, then we'll just the reimbursement comes through ODF, and it's just fire limitation. If it's a flood fight, and we need a whole bunch of people out there sandbagging, guardsmen out there sandbagging to save something, then that's National Guard, then that's state active duty, and quite frankly, we come back to you and ask for a reimbursement of those costs. Slide. Moving on to the build partnerships piece. The two that were they're mentioned yesterday, and it's Youth Challenge and it's Starbase. Just to fill in a couple of holes from yesterday, We talked about the 22-week program, phase one. A year is the mentor program to follow to keep these young adults on track. 16, 17, 18, I would like to dispel a rumor. We do not recruit these young adults. We don't even care if they join the military. What we care about is that they stay on track and they're good, solid citizens. And from that standpoint, that's why it's a successful program.
And I guess I don't have to raise my own hand. Okay.
No, you can just talk.
I wanted to double check. I'm so used to it. By the end of session, I'll be used to this.
Representative Stark.
Thank you. I feel better. So I heard rumor that you guys are considering renaming this to Jackie's Youth Challenge. Can you validate that?
Co-chair Stark, Co-chair Winters was a big supporter and has been a big supporter of our facility, and she helped get a bond in the 15 session that helped remodel that facility. In fact, we sold the bonds last month. The money is available here shortly. And what we're dealing with in that remodel is going to be a little bit complicated because we can't shut down any of the classes. So we may elongate how long that that construction lasts. And so we'd be honored to have someone like Senator Winters on the plaque for that facility, to be frank with you. The second piece that I want to cover is Starbase. We did provide an answer back on what some of those schools serve, sir, back to Mr. Burka. And so just like to highlight 2,600 students, Portland area, Cave Falls area. It's basically 25 hours of instruction. Usually we do 1 5-hour class per week for 5 weeks. And then that equals one class. And so it's a great deal of effort in terms of the STEM piece is science, technology, et cetera. They get into robotics. It's a lot of hands-on type stuff. And all these classes, the NGB requirement is actually 70% must be Title I schools. We have applied 100%. So all of these are Title I schools that opportunities that fifth grade children may not have ordinarily. Our foundation on the support and enhancement elements is the capital construction, capital improvement, and debt service. A couple of pictures here that we've recently had, and I'll cover some more here on the subsequent slides. Capital construction, it's over $1 million. These are projects. The goal is to leverage state funds as well as with joint federal funds. The pictures that you see there are representations of what our new Joint Forces Headquarters building will be here in Salem. We outgrew the facility that we have, the copper top over by vicinity, the DAS motor pool. And so we have a new facility going in right next to the Anderson Readiness Centers where OEM, the Oregon National Guard JOC, is located. In this case, that building, we federal funding, we had $18.5 million, and then this last session we had $6.7 million in Q bonds to augment that piece. Ground's already broken. We hope completion is in June of 2018. Another capital construction project. No capital construction project's complete without the youth challenge piece, and that's where we got the $4.97 million in Q bonds for that. Capital improvements, this is less than $1 million. We're chasing federal dollars. This is largely federal money. These are small projects where we're coming back. Examples, we'd be coming back and asking you for limitation if we were able to chase these and successfully get this. The one on the left, the Oregon Military Museum, we've been chasing these series of projects over the last several years. Believe it or not, there is an Oregon Military Museum. It's in Clackamas. It's at Camp Withicum. It's not open, but it will be within the next year or so. This coming biennium, we hope to have it straight. We have a lot of federal money, and it's 100% federal funding. We also entered into an agreement with 501c3, the Oregon Military Museum project. This project is led by Tommy Thayer, who's the lead guitarist for KISS. The museum is named the General Thayer Museum for good reasons, honorable reasons, and this son would like to make certain that this museum is the best thing possible for his father. You may have seen that there is a fundraising event just a couple of Saturdays ago. Tommy Thayer has a band, a Legends band with Alice Cooper in it, and then they also brought in KISS and they raised $1.4 million for this museum, and it will go largely to displays, which is a never-ending action when you're dealing with lighting and that types of things to make sure we augment. We have 14,000 artifacts that have been boxed up, and we have over 30,000 library volumes, stuff dating back to the 1800s. So we're very proud of where the future of this museum is going. And it will be free to the public. This is not going to be a pay to come in and see what happens inside the Oregon military's history. Debt service, of course, all debts must be repaid. This is the program that we put it in. And the interest costs, majority of the debt service is in general fund. An example, the building on the left, 41st Brigade's Armed Forces Reserve Center, was $70 million in federal funds and then $3 million in COPs. And then Fort Dalles on the right was a unique partnership that we had $4 million in Q bonds from you. Thank you. As well as $8 million from community colleges and workforce development, and then another $13 million from federal funds and for that facility to be built. I'd like to transition to our key performance. Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on the capital projects, are you going to cover, we had talked offline about deferred maintenance. Are you going to cover that at some point, or should I bring it in here?
Co-chairs, Representative Huffman, we have some number slides later on, particularly as it applies to deferred maintenance and the $134 million. It's an excellent topic. There are many ways to try and bring down that deferred maintenance besides crossing our fingers and hoping that it doesn't increase. There's also building new buildings, but we're constantly chasing this deferred maintenance gorilla to make certain that we can keep those costs down as much as possible. And we'll have some numbers here later to show for that, sir.
Thanks.
Key performance measures. This slide identifies our annual progress report from 30 September. The good news is we have several greens. The bad news is we also have some reds and nothing in between. It's green and red. We send this survey out to multiple groups to include county commissioners, sheriffs, PSAP, directors of the 911 centers, and then county and city emergency managers. I'll cover the reds and the greens here on the slides. The first two I'd like to cover on the green key performance measures is the youth challenge. Again, we're very proud of this. 93% of the cadets completed the program, received a GED, a high school diploma, or earned those 8 certified credits to go back to their hometown high school. Very important to us. Very important program, and quite frankly, we lead the nation. The second KPM that I'd like to address is KPM 6 and the reintegration piece. Granted, the years are behind us in terms of the huge amount of soldiers and airmen that are deploying, but we're still doing it, as General Stencil mentioned yesterday and briefed to you. And so our reintegration program helps serve those families and those soldiers and airmen as they return from overseas. Every single soldier and airman has been referred to reintegration services to include career fairs, job fairs. We met with over 300 employers. Family assistance provided over 36,000 contacts for resource assistance during and after that deployment. Very important program that we have out there in terms of making certain that we take care of the home front as those soldiers and airmen are overseas. Key performance measures on the red side. Our very first one, KPM 1, aptly numbered for good reasons. Strength is our number one priority. It's General Stencil's number one priority. This recruiting metric is actually the front half, walking into the door, and then retention would be the back half. We did not meet goal. We only had 780 enlistments out of 1,036. We were roughly 31 out of 54 states and territories on the Army Guard side. On the Air Guard side, we were 30th out of 54, but we're always hovering on the Air Guard side at 100%. In this case, they're about 102%. A lot more sexy hanging out with F-15s than it is with just weapons. And so the Air Guard has always been a very, very high strength.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. Mr. Stuckey, as you know, I'm new to this subcommittee, so thank you for bearing with some one-on-one questions. But where are you in KPM-1 compared to previous biennia?
Co-chair is Senator Steiner Hayward. We've fallen off.
Okay.
We've fallen off. Many states, what we've seen here in these war years, and I'm going back to 9/11 forward, there are many years that the recruiting incentives were huge on the federal side. Those
sure.
have tapered off. DOD budgets have shrunk. What we have seen, generally speaking, is those states that have an educational package of some sort, that is the common denominator for a high-strength state. And it's usually a have and have not. You got to compete with other states. And so the states, they either have some form of tuition assistance on college, grants, et cetera, that helps drive that strength component. We don't have that. Quite frankly, we're one of three, Arizona, Guam, and Oregon, that doesn't provide that type of tuition assistance to a National Guardsman.
That's a problem.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Second KPM I'd like to cover is KPM number 2, average age, 37 years on our armories. These armories have gotten old and a little dilapidated, 134 million in deferred maintenance. It would be a lot worse if we didn't have our Armory Service Life Extension Program, which helps remodel those. Thank you to the legislature and our capital construction projects. But this KPM is really just a report right out of NGB and our installation status report in terms of what we're capable of doing, and they're showing some wear.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Winters,
what percentage of them are you looking at lead abatement and some of those other issues? And I know that federally you're looking at getting federal funds. That's one question. And two, how many of the armories that where we were looking for sustainability or looking for some financial contribution from the community due to usage, and where are we? Are they being used? Are they not being used? Are the dollars coming in or not coming in? Where will we receive some of that reporting?
Co-Chair Stark, Co-Chair Winters, first part of your question, we have 10 armories left to be abated due to the lead IFR issue. That is, we had 12, and we have abated and converted two of them. In addition to that, we believe that there may be a couple of more in old conversions that occurred pre-1990, but we're still making certain that we're completely straight on that. It has affected our rental revenue, and that's really the second part of your question. From the standpoint of what we're capable of doing, National Guard Bureau created a standard. They created a very, very hard standard for the safety and health of both the employees as well as the public. And what they've said is that anything over 40 micrograms, which is a unit of measure for lead, then they say we're closing this down to the public. And quite frankly, EPA, HUD, and Oregon OSHA say something completely different. But we're following that standard, and it has hurt our rental revenue. Roughly about $300,000 in rental revenue is what we're estimating to be lost for this biennium, which ties to KPM number 3, and that's why you see that decrease.
So is there any do you have those armories ranked of that 300 and plus thousands of loss in revenue?
Co-Chair Stark, Co-Chair Winters, we have them ranked in terms of what our highest revenue earners are and what is lost, and we can certainly provide that information to you. And some of our bigger rental revenue earners were out there. Let me be clear, though. We want to be safe with our armories. We rent those armories. We want to make certain that they're safe for our employees and the public. And so at that point, we have chased federal dollars, and the good positive thing out of a series of media articles, newspaper articles, has been that National Guard Bureau moved off that 50-50 stance. And that's a big deal, because in a cut environment, asking you for state money to match is very, very hard. So Guard Bureau has said, okay, great, we'll provide it. We have sent requests in for $21.3 million. That's the good news. The bad news is they said, well, you just got to take it out of your existing federal dollars. So we think we might be able to get 4 done this year, but not all 10 of them.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Co-Chair Winters, you know, there's a in smaller towns, there's a dance that has to be done. And Dave and I have participated in that around the readiness.
Is it a waltz or is it a two-step?
What would you – we were
– Sir, you lead. I don't know.
We were backing away. I'm not sure what that dance is called. The Readiness Center in the Dalles is well used, but we have to be cautious that we're not too aggressive in marketing the Readiness Center. And I'm not saying that Dave doesn't market and his folks aggressively, but there is a competition between private venues, and so there's a bit of a dance that has to go on there so that the government's not viewed as coming in taxpayers supporting competition for free enterprise. So it's a little challenging at times.
Does that exist for other locations as well as the Dalles?
Co-chairs, Senator Winters,
or is that unique to the Dalles?
There are some places where we have to make certain that we play team ball, and that's in effect what we're trying to do here. What we market in the Dalles, between that and the other high venue location, is they're a little bit different. But we got to work together on this. It's not that way across the board, but it is that way in several other places as well. Our major budget drivers and environmental factors, no surprises up here. Lead abatement has been our number one. We've been chasing that and making certain that that gets solidified and completed here. Our next one that I'd like to address is the third one down, is the Portland Air National Guard stormwater fees. Portland Bureau of Emergency Services, Environmental Services, excuse me, has assessed a new fee on Portland Air National Guard base. It's for a biennium, it's over $1 million. And so the state share, again, this they view a utility on paying as an 80-20 also. So the federal government will pay 80% of that. The state share is roughly $220K for this coming biennium. It's a must-pay bill. We're going to pay it one way or the other. The next one, deferred maintenance, that $134 million backlog, over 2,000 projects. And it's your standard issues inside the 50-era type armories and later HVACs, boilers, electrical systems, roofs, seismic upgrades. The last two cover OEM federal grants. We could do more with more, but the grant streams right now, that's actually a misnomer. There's a reduction. It's holding steady right now. OEM basically receives two main grants. One is the Homeland Security grant, which is at $4 million a year, and then the EMPG grant, Emergency Management Performance Grant, which is 5.2. Again, it's passed through. 80% of that grant, OEM doesn't keep that and sit on it. They pass it through to the locals. The EMPG grant pays for those emergency managers across the state. It's people money at the county and city level. In fact, OEM has the highest percentage of EMPG money that it goes to the local jurisdictions at 87%. I take pride in that. As the same token, that means that there's not a lot of general fund to match to keep it inside OEM.
Mr. Chair? Yep. Would you go back to the Portland Air National Guard, the stormwater issue? That was city, not county, right?
Co-Chair Stark, Senator Winters, that is correct.
Was it a rate increase by the city?
It was an assessment on. Go ahead.
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. Yeah, it's a citywide assessment fee on stormwater. I believe all residents and businesses inside the city are subject to that new mm-hmm. fee. We had some litigation surrounding that fee that we lost, and it has come to become a must-pay bill for us, about $1 million a biennium.
Wonder what we can charge the city.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could tell you a story about paying stormwater assessments, and there is no infrastructure in front of my house. But anyway, that's a whole nother thing.
That's what we said, sir.
Same argument you lost, so I'm not going to go there.
Sorry for interrupting, sir.
There's a precedent, so I won't go there. I'll save my money. Deferred maintenance. How do you have that set up? Are you trying to nibble away at it each biennium, or what are we looking at? Or is it just kind of on hold and building?
Co-chairs, Representative Huffman, if I could bring up Roy Swofford. He's the director of our installations branch that manages this. And he's the one, he's that guy at the bottom of the dike that's kind of plugging the holes of the dam to make certain that the water doesn't leak out. Quite frankly, he doesn't have enough hands and toes, fingers and toes. Go ahead.
Right. Co-Chair Stark, Co-Chair Winter. Roy Swofford, Director of Installations for the Military Department. So this is always a little tricky. It's a balance between what the funding that we have in available, primarily state funds that we can use it to match the federal funds that allow us to get work done on the armories. And that having that state funds, general fund or other funds, is the difficulty. And so the ACLIP projects that you have generously provided over the years is how we are able to eliminate big chunks of deferred maintenance, like, you know, an entire facility at a time. So those are very, very helpful. But it is the code changes, it is the aging infrastructure, it's the life cycle cost replacement that is really where we're challenged trying to keep up with it.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So am I hearing that we're leaving federal money on the table that we could be leveraging for deferred maintenance, or did I
Is that right?
Yeah, Co-Chair Stark, Co-Chair Winters, Representative Huffman. We have a very easy time spending the federal dollars. We don't leave any money on the table. It's the limitation of state funding just allows us to spend more federal dollars to get more work done in the armory. So not having the state dollars just means that we're spending the money on at the federal training centers, federally funded supportable training centers, or maintenance facilities, aviation facilities. And so this way the biggest chunk of deferred maintenance is in the armories themselves.
Co-chairs, Representative Huffman, getting money out of National Guard Bureau is fairly simple in the bigger scheme of things in terms of trying to chase dollars and projects. We've been successful. Our new year is always September, the last day of September. We don't celebrate in December and January. We celebrate in September. And so he's standing there with a tin cup on the last day of September, and when National Guard Bureau is pulling out all these extra federal dollars saying, what do we need to spend before the next fiscal year starts on 1 October? Then he's standing there saying, okay, I got shovel-ready project here, 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 and here. If he doesn't have the state match, then he doesn't ask for those particular projects. If we do have the state match, then oftentimes we also come back, particularly if it's capital improvements under $1 million, we'll come back and ask you for a limitation so we can spend other people's money. So there is this dance that we play in terms of we could go out and get more, but we're also constrained by that piece with the state.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
So explain to me exactly what the timeline looks like on those. So, for example, if an agency is applying for a federal grant, I know about OHA, right? The health authority applies for gazillions of grants. And the rule is that they have to get approval from the legislature. But the legislature isn't here all the time, especially in September, because September 30th is after Ledge Days, guaranteed. So we're not here. And you think that we've unscheduled some funds that you could be using, but we haven't given you permission to use them yet. Are you allowed to work with LFO? I mean, is it like other grant situations?
It's not a grant.
It's not, or it doesn't qualify as a grant, or?
Go ahead.
I mean, I just want to, I'd hate for you guys to be hamstrung if
there are limitations.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just saying, like, can they come back for a different limitation? You know,
Co-chairs.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't have in between the four short session, the long session.
Co-chair Senator Steiner Hayward. The way we've handled that in the past is we will get a list of projects, and once we know what the federal funds are that are going to coming into the organization, we work with colleagues at CFO and LFO to get the proper type of. Traditionally, capital construction limitation or capital improvement limitation, federal fund capital construction or capital improvement limitation, loaded during the next e-board, or if it's during the legislative days to go into the even numbered year session to get that taken care of. So we've done that for several years now.
So you're not actually completely barred from getting there. You just come in after the fact and ask for the limitation.
Correct.
If you think it's something that we're going to.
Yes.
You've been working with CFO and LFO, and they say, yeah, they'll approve this.
Correct.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's continue.
If I could, the last slide, the last bullet, civil engineering fire support, and this goes back to that stormwater fees versus fire department and the $100K for each. And so those are both of concerns that we have in our budget drivers in maintaining what we have at the two fire bases, air bases. Major changes the last 6 years. Not going to brief them all. But obviously, our federal wartime missions. We peaked at 5,500 all hands on deck to make certain that we could get those soldiers and airmen out in 2009, 2010. We have the HH-60 unit, our Black Hawk unit that General Stinsel mentioned yesterday down in Texas going overseas. They're the ones that do a lot of the high elevation rescues, search and rescues that we have across the state. We left one back and two crews to try and help cover that state mission, but most of it is going to be downrange here. And then we have another unit deploying here shortly, and it's our MP, our military police unit. 1113, Umatilla Chemical Depot caretaker. Just a quick explanation. The Umatilla Army Depot closed when they finally burned and all the bad stuff over there. They went into this caretaker status. We took a portion of it. We're in between the Oregon National Guard and the Columbia Development Authority, which are the two counties, the ports, and the tribes that are in that particular area. We've divvied up this former Army depot. There's about 19,000 acres or so, and the Oregon Guard is going to have on license 7,500 acres. That will help shoulder some training shortfalls, range and training land shortfall that we have in that portion of the state. But right now, we still don't have the license. We're still, the Army is a big bureaucracy, and they move slow sometimes, and we're waiting for them to give us that dang license so we can go out and start managing it under our authorities versus under the Army caretaker status. And we also have, there's a pop in here on positions for that later in this briefing. Bounce down to 15 and 17. General Stinsel mentioned organizational structure has changed. He certainly tweaked how we're composed within the Oregon National Guard, the Oregon Military Department. And then we've discussed text to 911 and indoor lead contamination. Our cost containment, our program delivery improvements. A lot of the facilities that we bring in online are LEED certified. Four of them were gold, 41st in Camp Withicum, Lane County, Ontario, and Dallas, and then we're LEED silver in the Dalles. Governor's executive order on the second bullet asked us to decrease our water consumption here, and we did by 16% across our enterprise. And then the last two bullets are really about energy projects, and so we're 50-50 on armories, but if we can find that federal nexus, if we can say, this is a federal requirement, why can't the feds pay 100% of it? Then that's what we do in a lot of our energy projects. We tie it back to a presidential directive, 13693, that says renew and reduce. And so that we get the feds to pitch in the whole enchilada, and that obviously helps utility costs and others across our infrastructure. Major budgetary information. This is these are the items that are the big ones that are in our governor's budget, recommended budget right now. First one is the federal funds limitation, the 21 positions. We're thankful for the caretaker agreement, as well as getting those positions on a limited duration within her budget. Bullet two is the youth challenge, and that's the 13 positions that we're getting in limited duration. This is going to be what we asked for, or what our plan is that we build this, we remodel this facility, but then you also have to have the staff and you have to have the one-time cost to do it. And so the construction is just a component of it. So we're going to phase this. So this biennium, we wanted to bring up about half the student load, and then the following biennium in 1921, we wanted to bring in the other student load. And we just didn't want to jump into the pool. We wanted to wade into it to get this, to increase staff up to about 80 students is what we were looking for.
Can you share, Mr. Chair, with this body the operational funding and your relationship with the Bend and Redmond School Districts?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, our primary funding structure for the Youth Challenge Program is financed with ADM, Average Daily Membership Revenue, through Bend Lapine School District. We're able to leverage that against National Guard Bureau Cooperative Agreement funds. The program is split 75-25, so 75% is covered through NGB federal funds, and the remaining 25% is primarily driven by other funds through the ADM revenue.
I wanted you to hear those percentages because without, you know, your 75% is coming federal, and those districts contribute the 25%, and they're receiving the 100%. I just need to put that in context.
Thank you, Co-Chair Stark, Senator Winters. From the standpoint of our next one, bullets 4 through 7, I'll brief on associated slides coming up. Capital construction. Here's what we asked for that were in the governor's recommended budget. First is our regional armory emergency enhancement. So the first two on the coast, Newport, Coos Bay, old facilities that we wanted seismically upgraded. Both are out of the tsunami inundation line. Both of them need some improvements. What we used to do in the old days is focus on fit, finish, electrical, HVAC. Now it's always seismic first. Seismic, and then we'll figure out what we're doing with electrical, and then we'll worry about painting new paint over the top of old paint. But we got to get the seismic capability there. Those facilities mean a lot to both the soldiers as well as the locals. The other facilities within our regional emergency enhancement program, Anderson Readiness Center, that's where the OEM is. That's where the JOC is. It is not an essential seismic building. It needs to improve. And then the last two are our Army Aviation. And what we wanted to do on Army Aviation, we have our Blackhawks and our Lakotas located in Salem, and then we have our Chinooks, the double-bladed helicopters located at Pendleton, and we wanted to make certain those facilities were fortified, fuel, et cetera, so when if Cascadia unzips, then those helicopters are operational, as well as all the other civilian helicopters that we're going to be helping support in a response to a Cascadia. The next two, Jackson Armory, right off the Portland airport. We wanted a service life extension program, again, seismic first before we move on, as well as Grants Pass, two facilities that we've had on the list for quite some time that we're hopeful that we can get bonding for. The last one's a little bit unique. In this particular case, what we have is this request is for limitation to purchase land necessary to construct new readiness centers. It's both the Hillsborough Armory built in 54 and then the Redmond Armory built in 55. So we have this capital construction account established in ORS. Right now there's a little less than $2.2 million in it. And we put our proceeds from our sales into it, and then we use that money to turn around and buy new property so we can develop new readiness centers. The 1.5 for Hillsborough, we've already have an agreement with Washington County. We're asking for your permission to spend that money, so that money can just go to Washington County, and our plan is that we have a National Guard Bureau long-range construction plan where we have a new readiness center going into Washington County in 2023 for a total of $22 million. The land we purchase now, when the long-range construction plan from NGB comes in, we can drop a new armory out there. Then the old Hillsborough Armory goes to the Washington County Fairgrounds, and it belongs to them. Redmond, it's DSL land. We need to buy it. The Redmond Armory, I don't know if you've driven through Redmond recently, but it's kind of on the main strip. It's kind of in the way of progress and business, and we found a new site out by the fairgrounds in Deschutes County, and we want to buy that land to secure a spot in the future for a new armory location, which also ties to a training area that we have in Central Oregon. Summary of revenues, the top half is...
Hold on just a moment. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Dave, just a little bit east of the airport there, instead of going in more of a southerly direction by the fairgrounds, the training area to the east of the airport, there's not property there that would be good and suitable for that armory as opposed to buying new property?
Co-chairs, Representative Huffman. One of the things that we like to do is we want to be as close to the community as possible. We certainly don't want to be in the way of business in some cases. That training site, there is property located out there. It's out of the way. It's out of mind's way. And it goes back to KPM number one in trying to recruit and retain soldiers. And the second we get too disassociated with the community, then we become forgotten. And that's really where we want it. We want to be visible enough that they can see us, and they can feel us, and they can come up and join our organization.
Follow. It is closer to the community college and stuff there where you're talking about. So I was just curious, though. And maybe that training site is a little few miles further east than I was remembering. So,
co-chairs, Representative Huffman, the ground is associated to is BLM land, and then we have a drive through BLM, which is kind of getting built up. There's a couple of sections in that area that are getting built up with high end developments. And then we get into the BAC Training Center, which is which is off the east side, off of the Redmond Airport, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Six more slides on money, on the numbers. Summary of revenues. The top half is other funds. The biggest chunk is the 911 dollars that comes in. That's the very first piece, the tax, estimating at about $84 million here. The bottom half is the federal funds that we receive. Slide. On our general fund, we've held steady in a couple of areas. In administration, there's an uptick of $1.1 million. That's for a total of $5 million. That's really government services fees charged. Operations, that $7 million dropping from 9 to 7 is really a demonstration of what we don't need in total in the fire support program or fire department programs. And then in community service, that 205, that was, or that 206 to 197 to zero is just a state investment that we did have that is not in the recommended budget at this time. So Senate Bill 5532 in mass is at the bottom right corner at $26 million. Other funds, just brief a couple of points here in operations. Operations, the second line down, that's really the Armory rental revenue piece. We're a little bit optimistic that it's going to be at $4.4 million. Again, emergency management at 91 is generally 911 funds. What you see in community service, that $3 million, that's and its limitation for ADM and school lunch money from, but that's, again, it's still just limitation across the board for other funds. And federal funds, this is the lifeblood of our organization, and the federal dollars. This slide just really demonstrates the amount of money that we're capable of bringing in, largely from a limitation standpoint. Transition here from the numbers to OEM proposed legislation. We had two bills, legislative concepts from this agency. Both of them were out of the Office of Emergency Management, Senate Bill 61, which just expands ORS. State agencies are involved in the Oregon Emergency Response System, a concept, a construct. And what Director Phelps wanted to do was just expand that with additional agencies. And then Senate Bill 67 is just really allows state agencies and also the tribal governments to participate. So it's an opt-in type of program. Intrastate type of mutual assistance program, and it's really a pay-to-play type of thing, and it strengthens that ability from one jurisdiction to the other to help support and reinforce what they may need across this state. Last one, 2488, just want to bring it up. It's a bill that it's the Oregon Promise. Oregon Promise actually had one aspect in it that said that you had to do it within 6 months of high school graduation or earning that. What we have asked, Representative Bentz sponsored this bill has asked, was that the National Guard could have an exemption for that. Because you graduate from high school, you're going off to basic and AIT, and oftentimes you're not back within 6 months. You're still off at your schooling.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
It's interesting you bring that up, Mr. Stuckey, because as we talked about this issue earlier in the meeting today, I was wondering about whether, I don't know about the criteria that you have to have academically to join the Guard, but it's possible that some of your kids don't actually have the criteria to meet Oregon Promise. But I'm wondering whether we could figure out a way that if they could, that an alternative credential, if you will, would be a certain amount of service in the Guard and a recommendation from their commander or something that could figure out a new path, because some of these kids, they need a couple of years to pull themselves together and get a little discipline before they go on to college, and they don't really see the value of an education when they're in high school, but once they're in the military they do see it. So I wonder if we should talk to Representative Bentz about whether we might add something into that as another recruiting tool for you.
Thank you, co-chairs. Senator Steiner Hayward, we can certainly do that, and the governor's office has asked that we work with him on that to try and
happy to help if I can.
Yes, ma'am. And there's a component in there on prioritization for guardsmen. That's not what we really wanted to do. Is just make certain the guardsmen had that ability.
Sure.
To do that. Mm-hmm. All cuts hurt. This is our HERT slide. This is the top part is came out of the governor's recommended budget package 090. And then the bottom half was the additional cuts that we asked that was asked for a total of 15%. The Army National Guard, the piece that I'd like to brief is the fund shift, the six positions there at the second from the bottom, 406. Again, it's cooperative agreement. This ties right back to Mr. Swofford and his actions in the cooperative agreements with National Guard Bureau. You can only have 45% of your staff that is personnel services, and so it might lead to problems. But we're offering that up as an opportunity because you've asked for those reduction numbers.
Coach Winters,
just I have a quick question, and I thank you. In looking at your tea leaves and looking to the future, and I happen to hear, and I know we'll hear more this evening from the president, do you anticipate, or in talking to Washington, what kind of maybe increase in funding that may be directed? Because I know that the president is talking about greatly increasing the military and how much that will actually address or deal with the National Guard as well.
Yeah, Co-Chair Stark, Senator Winters, within the military infrastructure, the DOD, there was initial enthusiasm about a potential for increase, but now that is kind of leveled out. There's really no answer right now at this point in time to direction in which we're going. So I know that's a discussion point that we have all the time with Guard Bureau as well as in the DOD arena. It's just too early to tell. You asked for our long-term vacancies. These are the positions. We have 51 of them. Highlighted in here also the FF, whether or not it's a federal fund or other fund. And so we had asked that that when you analyze this, we're not trying to do vacancy savings. Some of these positions are difficult and challenging. The one position, if you go about halfway down, program analyst 2 at OEM, where it shows 50% of general fund, the reality is what we did was we made a decision to do a limited duration, higher level position to try and get that right person in. So that money is being used for a different level of position. The general fund is. The vast majority of the other money is federal dollars. And then the very bottom, we're just simply having recruitment challenges to try and get them. We can't compete with private sector or they've just been long-term vacancies. So, co-chairs, members of the committee, that concludes my briefing. I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, and I'd be happy to answer any additional questions.
Rep. Huffman.
Oh, I just assumed vacancy. You would have a question.
Well, Mr. Stuckey was very, very thorough and liberally using the FFs there. So,
did you say liberal?
I picked up on that.
Yes.
He liberally used FFs.
Sure.
Do we have any questions? All right. Well, then, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the presentation. We look forward to public testimony tomorrow. And on that note, we I'm sorry, Mr. Ball. I was so excited.
Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dustin Ball with the Chief Financial Office, and I have a brief presentation again today that will give you a high-level overview of the governor's budget for the Oregon Military Department, and I'm going to go through these slides fairly quickly. The agency has done a fairly good job. They've done an excellent job going through the agency and their budget over the last 2 days. So if you have any questions, please feel free to stop me, and I will get to it. The agency provides combat-ready units and equipment. They coordinate the emergency response and navigation, and they offer educational programs to at-risk youth. Issues in the that the agency is facing in the upcoming budget period are really related to infrastructure, and we hit on that today. It's really looking at deferred maintenance, the lead contamination that exists in the armories, and providing the facilities and making sure that the agency has the ability to respond and operate if and when there's a severe event that occurs within Oregon. The priorities in the governor's budget that we're trying to address were really looking at resiliency, making sure that we have healthy and safe communities, and providing for critical infrastructure throughout Oregon. This slide, you've seen this in other agency presentations, is going to give you the agency budget history. The far left is the actuals from the 13-15. The current 15-17 legislatively approved budget is in the middle, and the far right is the governor's budget. That big decrease in FTE you see from the 13-15 to the 15-17 budget is really related to the phase out of the equipment refurbishment program that was at Camp Withicum, and there were 64 positions associated with that, and that was a phase out. It was a step down from the activities in the Gulf. This next slide is going to give you a breakout of where that money is flowing. And again, this is all funds. And what you see here is the majority of funds that flow through the agency are really in the special payments. And that is related to the 911 dollars that are flowing out to communities, as well as the OEM. It's a disaster mitigation and recovery dollars. Key investments in the governor's budget, again, looking towards infrastructure. We're providing, again, this is all bond financing for critical infrastructure to make sure that the critical facilities are emergency operation center standards. So when there is an event, they can operate, not just remain standing, but operate. And we have two service life extension projects, one at Grant Pass Armory, and the other is the Jackson Armory in Portland. And these will, again, address some of the deferred maintenance issues that the agency has. And then we also have the statewide adjustments, which are DAS, state government service charge, and price list adjustments, as well as the attorney general adjustments. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Are there any questions? All right. Anything else for the good of the order? Nothing I'm forgetting this time.
How many cadets are showing up tomorrow?
I don't know. Do we know how many cadets are coming tomorrow?
We've got two cadets, one graduate and one current cadet, and then a parent of a past student.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to hearing them tomorrow. And on that note, I will close today's hearing. We are adjourned.
That's what we like to hear.
You know,
that's what we like to hear.
You know, we are adjourned.